The last couple of weeks, we've been looking at the blessings, if you could call it that, and certainly we could as we studied, but the blessings of trials and afflictions and trying to understand why we have to go through trials and afflictions. And we've even looked at the topic of, you know, where is it, why is it that we even have afflictions and sufferings and trials within our life? This morning, what we want to do is we want to, before we get into next week, looking at death, and then the week after, looking at, you know, what about the afterlife and what do we know about the afterlife. This morning, I want us to kind of transition from looking at the topic that we've been looking at before we get into the topic of death and just look at the answer to the question, who is the cause of our afflictions and trials? Because to me, there are some interesting answers in the Bible. The Bible does give us indication as to the answer to that particular question. And I find it interesting that as we take a look at the answers to this question, that, you know, we're so easy at blaming everybody else but ourselves. But what we're going to do is we're going to find that sometimes we are our own worst enemies in this. So we're going to look at the answers to this, and we're going to start by looking at this fact. God is not the source of our trials and afflictions. God does not cause trials and afflictions and sufferings. God is our help in those times, as we've certainly looked at over the last couple of weeks, but he is not the source of it. But it's interesting to me, and I hear this a lot, and I'm sure you've probably heard this as well. Sometimes whenever bad things happen to people in life, what sometimes is the first and initial and natural reaction? Why has God done this to me? You know, that tends to be the way that people look at it. And I think mostly because people realize and understand that certainly God has the power to stop those things, but we've looked at and discussed the reasons why he sometimes chooses not to do that. But he is never to be blamed for the things that we go through, and yet people still sometimes blame him. I remember whenever I'd first moved to Arnett back in 1993. About 6 months after being there, there was a particular man in the congregation whose son had decided to go out and party with his friends, and he was driving a couple of his friends home, and he lost control of his pickup, got thrown out of the vehicle, and had a brain injury. And I'll never forget, I got the call at about 1 o'clock at night, or 1 o'clock in the morning, however you want to view that. And the man's name was Randy. Randy said, my son has been in a terrible accident. He said, I'm over at Mom and Dad's. He said, could you come over and be with us? And I said, absolutely. So I ran over to the house and offered what words of comfort that I could. And it came time for Randy to leave and head down to Oklahoma City, where his son had been metaflighted because of his serious injury. And he said, Dad, he said, I need you to take me home. So I got in the vehicle and I drove him home. And on the way, I'll never forget, he's never forgot this either. He said to me, he said, Den, he said, I'm so mad at God right now. Why is it that he's done this thing? And you know, I hadn't been a minister for very long. That's a pretty serious question. It's a pretty serious statement to have to make. But I remember that I just simply looked at him and said, Randy, you're angry and upset right now, and I believe with all my heart God understands your anger. But I said, I believe he'll give us the answers to this situation later on in time, but, you know, we just need to handle this a moment at a time as we go along. And, you know, he's brought up the subject many times, and I've brought up the subject many times that, you know, he realized later on it wasn't God that had done that. But sometimes it's the natural reaction of man to blame the Almighty, because we know what kind of power He has. And folks, realize that this is something that's been going on for a long time. In fact, we're going to look at an example at the very beginning of time with Adam and Eve. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 12. And you remember the story. Adam and Eve, they had eaten the fruit that they were told not to eat of. And they were trying to hide from God. And God comes through the garden and He starts asking questions. Adam mentions the fact that, we had to put on clothes because we're naked. God says, how do you know that you were naked? And then He asks them, did you eat of the fruit that I told you not to eat of? This was Adam's reply. And listen to this very closely. The man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me fruit of the tree and I ate. And we looked at this a Sunday night not too long ago, and we mentioned the fact that, he blamed his wife in this deal. But notice who else he blames. The woman whom you gave to me blames God, doesn't he? It was God's fault that this sin had happened. But Adam learned the hard way. It wasn't God's fault. It was his fault. Trials and temptations which are of the same Greek word, never come from God. James chapter 1, verse 13 says, let no one say when he is tempted that I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and listen to this closely, and He Himself tempts no one. The Greek word translated tempted here is the same word translated trials earlier in this letter. It is just a change of the noun form to the verb form, but it is the same word. The expositor's Bible commentary says the Greek noun peresmos can refer either to an outward circumstance of trial or to a temptation to sin. The same is true of the verb form as well. So whenever we discuss trials and we discuss temptations, trials we always look at as something that happens within our life. But there are temptations within the trials. There are decisions that need to be made, and there can be right decisions made to overcome the trial. There can be wrong decisions made. So therein, there is even temptation within trial. The reason the word is the same is because trials and temptations are two faces of the same coin. If we are in trials, then we are experiencing all kinds of temptations in the trial. Trials are so difficult because of the onslaught of temptations we face. Similarly, when facing temptations, we are experiencing a trial. We are going through a degree of distress as the temptation looms before our eyes. But if trials and temptations do not come from God, who do they come from? What's the source of our trials and temptations? What's the source of even our suffering due to the afflictions that we suffer? The Bible gives us answers. The Bible gives us three answers that we're going to look at this morning. The first answer is this. Trials, temptations, afflictions, and suffering, and I think you know the answer to this, come from Satan. Satan is one of the sources that our trials and suffering come from. Again, we can go back to the beginning on this one. Satan tempted Adam and Eve to sin, didn't he? And he knew that the results of that sin would cause hardship on Adam and Eve and all of mankind for the rest of their lives. Satan did so willingly and he did so gladly because it's his nature to do evil and wicked things. Was Satan the cause of their suffering? Well, in that particular instance, no. But he was the instigator to their suffering. Another example is found in Job chapter 1 and Job chapter 2. And again, Job is probably one of the great classic cases of suffering and affliction. But, one of the things, hard things that Job had to try to understand about his situation was, why am I going through this trial? I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't sinned to some point to cause this great affliction against me. But whenever we go back to the source, and this is one of the great things about the example of Job that I really love. I like those moments in the Bible where we get to see behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Where we get to see some of the workings of that spiritual realm. And we don't get to see that very often. And so when we take a look at it, it's kind of important to notice what happens. And we do gain an understanding of why Job suffered the way he did and what source did it come from. Because whenever we look at Job chapter 1, God looks upon the people of the earth and he sees Satan there roaming amongst the midst of them, because that's what Satan does. He roams amongst the midst of us. And he says to Satan, "Satan, have you considered my servant Job, an upright man, a righteous man, a good man?" And Satan says, "Yeah, but you know what? It's because you have placed a hedge around him, a hedge of wealth, prosperity, family. He's got all these good things in life, but you go and take those things away, and he'll curse you, and he won't be loyal to you anymore." And so God says, "Okay. If you think so, go do it." And he does it. Who gave him that affliction? Who gave him that suffering? Who gave him those trials? Satan did. God gave Job the help to get through them. Later on in chapter 2, after Job had come through that by praising God and worshiping God, whenever all those bad things happened to him, it says again that he looks upon the people of the earth and there's Satan roaming about in the midst of them. And he says the same thing to Satan. "Have you considered my servant Job? A good man, an upright man, a righteous man." And Satan says, "Yeah, but it's because you give him such great health. You know, there's no affliction upon him, but if you smite him with bad health, he'll curse you. He won't be loyal to you anymore." God says, "Okay, if you think so, go right ahead." And he does so. And once again, he proves to Satan that Job was going to remain loyal to him. But where did those health problems come from? Where did that pain and suffering come from? It came from Satan, not God. God gave Job the help to get through it. And so when we take a look at one of the things that Satan does that we need to really dislike him about, is that he not only tempts us, but he puts us through trials and suffering. And he is the cause of it a lot of times in our life. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 through 10. Look at these verses carefully. First of all, it mentions something that we all know. "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." I mean, that's pretty strong language. But that's the nature of Satan. That's what he wants to do. He wants to literally destroy us. He wants to destroy our souls. "Resist him," verse 9 says, "firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you." You know what? A lot of times verse 9 and 10 is separated from the understanding of what we need to know, but it's in continuation to verse 8. The Spirit is literally telling us that not only is Satan looking to see whom he may devour, not only is he trying to destroy souls, but he's the one that's given us suffering. Mentions it here. The suffering that you are going through. And after you have suffered for a little while, Satan's doing that to us. Satan gives us that suffering. Another reason to dislike him even more. This intimates to us that not only does Satan tempt us to sin, but he also likes to wreak chaos within our lives, and he brings suffering to our lives. Notice the fact, though, that at the end of verse 10, who is it that gives us the strength and the help and the comfort in reestablishing us whenever we go through these things? It's God. No sin coming from God. No trials coming from God. No temptation coming from God. Only help coming from our God. So does Satan make me do things? You know, we've heard that phrase several times by people throughout life. Satan made me do it. Well, does Satan really make us do anything? And the answer to that is no. Satan cannot make us do anything. Satan is limited on what he's allowed to do. Did you know that? Satan doesn't get to just roam around and do whatever he wants to us. Satan doesn't get to just tempt us, you know, any time in any way. He has to ask permission. Again, we go back to the example of Job. He wasn't able to take all those things away initially. He had to receive permission from God, because God will not allow us to go through anything beyond our own limitations, for which he will give us strength and he will give us an escape. It's also another interesting situation happens with Peter. Satan had to ask permission to tempt and try Peter. Look at Luke chapter 22 and verse 31. Now, Christ had just got through telling his apostles that I'm going to be betrayed and I'm going to die on the cross tonight. And, of course, Peter, being Peter, stands up and says, no, far be it. This isn't going to happen to you. I'll defend you. But then Christ looks at Peter and he says this, Simon, Simon, behold, and this is New American Standard Version, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you as wheat. He had to ask permission to do that. And of course, even though he was not tempted beyond his limitations, still Christ knew that he was going to fail. Christ knew that he would not look for that escape. Christ knew that he would not look for that strength to overcome it. And of course, he prophesied, before this night is through, before the cock crows, you will have denied me three times. But Satan had to ask permission to put Peter through that trial. Brothers and sisters, it's one of the great blessings that we need to lean on here, in knowing that there is no trial, there is no suffering, there is no affliction that we're going to go through in life that God doesn't know about ahead of time, and that he's not going to provide the comfort and the strength and the escape to get through it. Okay? But we've got to be looking for that. We've got to be leaning upon our God. We've got to trust in our God so that he will see us through. But those things do not come from God. Evil does not come from God. Evil comes from Satan. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, talks about the very thing that I've been alluding to this morning. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful. Is Satan faithful to us? No, he's doing bad things to us. But God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure that. And with this knowledge, it allows us to do this. We need to respect Satan for the power that he has, and there's no more difficult enemy that we have. We need to respect Satan, but we do not have to fear him. God is mightier than our adversary, and we need to believe that, and we need to know that. That's why the scripture says, for God is faithful. Faithful to who? To you and me. God's faithful to us. Faithful is a two-way road. If we're faithful to God, he's faithful to us. Secondly, trials, afflictions, and sufferings are the result of man's sins. Sometimes we are afflicted with trials and sufferings because someone else's sin has caused a reaction that has affected us. On September 11, 2001, a situation we're all familiar with, aren't we? 19 evil men coerced commercial airlines to fly into the World Trade Centers and also another plane that was crashed in Pennsylvania. Because of their sin, 3,000 innocent people were killed. And many, many thousands more afflicted with the pain of those deaths. The Islamic world would have us believe that this was motivated by religion. However, a deeper research into the religion shows us that these men did this atrocious act because they were murderers who believed that their act would provide them all the sex and wine that they could receive in heaven. That's literally what the religion teaches them. Because they were willing to give their lives for their God Allah, He would give them all the sex and wine that they wanted for the rest of eternity. In fact, investigation shows that they had quite a bit of that even before this particular event. But it was the evils and sin of those men that caused the trials and afflictions of thousands. Sometimes the sins of others can cause us afflictions and trials. Consider Cain and Abel. Cain, the bad son. Abel, the good son. Abel gave to God what God wanted. Abel pleased God with his sacrifices. Cain was too stubborn. Cain didn't want to give what it took to please God. And the way that he responded to this situation was to get jealous at his brother Abel. So jealous to the point that he killed him. Why? Abel was a good man. Abel did what God wanted him to do. But because of the sin of Cain, Abel was killed. And all of us who are parents knows that Adam and Eve must have been deeply afflicted with the death of their good son. Yet was it their fault? No. Not at that point. It was Cain's fault. Because of the sin of someone else, they suffered suffering and affliction and trial. So we know that one of the sources of our suffering and affliction and trials are the sins of others. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 10 says, "The soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no mercy in his eyes." Sometimes we can't help but suffer from the sins of others. And it doesn't seem fair, and it doesn't seem right, but that's the way it is. And again, when we go through those times, God is our solution. God is our comfort, and God is our strength. Finally, this morning, trials and sufferings and afflictions are sometimes brought on by our own sinful desires. And you know, here's one of those reasons that we tend to overlook. Because when you take a look at our society today and the way that a lot of mankind reacts to things and does things, we don't want to accept the fact that we sometimes sin. We don't want to affect that some or to accept that sometimes the trials and sufferings we go through are because of our own bad choices. But look at what the writer of James says, James chapter 1, verse 14 and verse 15. "But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire." Now note the fact, James isn't blaming this on Satan. James isn't blaming this on the sin of others. James is literally saying sometimes we cause our own temptations. Sometimes we cause our own trials and suffering and affliction. And then he says in verse 15, "Then desire, when it was conceived or has been conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death." How often have we seen lies destroy relationships? How often have we seen the sins of alcohol and drug abuse tear apart families. Infidelity in marriage looks to be a moment of pleasure, but its long-lasting results are usually the breakups of marriages that God has deemed holy and devastates the lives of children. It is a sad reality that few want to accept that some of the worst trials and sufferings we go through is because of our own bad choices. It is even more disheartening to acknowledge that whenever we sin, we have no one else to blame but ourselves. Brothers and sisters, we cannot stop Satan. He's going to tempt us for all our lives. But we can stand ready and be on guard against him. We cannot stop the sin of others and the afflictions we suffer sometimes because of those sins. But out of the three sources of sin, here's one that we can stop. Here's one that we can limit. Here's one we can do away with. If you and I want to put in the dedication and the commitment and the study and the practice, we can eliminate the personal temptations and desires within our lives. And certainly out of all the trials and afflictions and sufferings we go through in life, wouldn't it be good to know that we can limit some of them, we can avoid some of them by simply striving to become more mature as Christians ourselves? Do not allow your own desires to overcome you, and you can eliminate a lot of trials and suffering within life. Knowing that all the sources of trials and afflictions are true and that we will not escape life without sometime being overcome by them, what should our ultimate attitude be towards all these things? How do we guard against the trials and temptations of Satan? What should our defense be against the sins of others? How do we avoid falling into the pitfalls of our own sin? I've given one verse, and obviously there are many, in the New Testament, and also the Old Testament. But I want us to concentrate on this one area. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 through 16, and I want to look at this in conclusion. Peter writes and he says, "Therefore, preparing your minds for action." Preparation. Preparation is one of the great ways of avoiding the problems in life. Know that they're going to happen. Know from where the sources of these things happen and prepare yourself against them, or at least prepare yourself for the time in which trials will happen in life. Preparing your minds for action, being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We have to have that hope in Jesus Christ. We have to follow him in order to overcome a lot of these situations in life. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Since it is written, "You shall be holy, for I am holy." In order to get through the trials and sufferings of life, we need to lean upon our God. In order to avoid some of these trials and sufferings in life, we need to change ourselves. We need to change our hearts. We need to change our lifestyles. We need to try to be holy. You know, holy is a word that ever since I was a little kid, you know, singing the songs about holy, looking at the verses about holy. Holy's always been this magnificent word that always seems to be unattainable. But you know what the word holy means? It means to be separated to a particular cause. All God is asking us, and all God is telling us that we need to do in being prepared against the trials and sufferings of life, is to separate ourselves from sin separate ourselves from temptation. Separate ourselves from those worldly lifestyles. Be different. Strive to follow Christ in obedience. That's what Peter says there. Be obedient. And whenever we decide to change our lives, we can avoid a lot of trials and temptations in life. And we can also be ready for the times in which we have to experience them and go through them. God gives us all the source of knowledge that we need to encounter the bad things in life. But we have to be willing to accept it, and we have to be willing to commit ourselves to God's way in overcoming them. Question this morning is, are we prepared for those moments? And I want you to know this morning, if you're here this morning, you haven't obeyed the gospel, you're not prepared for what life has to give you. You're not prepared for what Satan has to give you. And you're not prepared for the subject we're going to talk about next week called death. But you can be prepared before you leave this building this morning. And there is no greater opportunity you will ever have than now. Because we're never guaranteed a moment beyond now. Now's the time to become prepared. Now's the time to have the protection of our Lord Jesus Christ as He watches over our soul and washes our soul clean and pure from sin. And how do we come in contact to such great power? The Bible tells us that the early Christians believed that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. They were willing to confess that before others. They repented of their sins, which is an ongoing process throughout life. And they were baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of their sins. And they tried every day. And here's where a lot of us are this morning. They tried every day to live righteously before God. To commit themselves to the Lord. And you know what? That's almost a daily process, isn't it? Every morning we wake up, we need to ask ourselves this question and we need to answer it honestly. Are we ready to commit ourselves to God this day? Because we're going to be tempted, we're going to be afflicted, and we're going to be tried. And if we're not ready for those moments, and we don't have that commitment, we're going to fail miserably. We need to commit ourselves to God. Are we willing to do that? Are you willing to do that this morning if you haven't obeyed the gospel? If you are willing to do so, we stand ready to assist you if you'll but come while together we stand and sing.